To practice early on. Let's have another go. Good morning.
Good morning.
Oh, that's fantastic. Thank you so much. It just makes me feel that you're here. It is a good morning as well. So, this is, I think, my third or fourth visit to you. So just a little bit. I know some of you have not been here when I've been here before. I'm a Baptist minister. My main work these days is that I mentor and coach Christian leaders, some of whom are church leaders, some of whom work in higher education, some of whom work in parachurch organisations. And as you've seen, I speak and write about interethnic church, which was the theme of my doctorate, which I finished a couple of years ago. And I'm a member at Shoreham Baptist Church, and we are delighted to recently just have welcomed a new minister. So Kevin started about three weeks ago. So Kevin Mills, who it's great to have him with us after the retirement of the previous minister. So I've been asked this morning to choose and speak about a psalm. Let me move that. Do you want to leave it off until I've got it in my hand? That might be the best thing to do. So I want to, I was asked to share a psalm with you this morning, so I've chosen a psalm, and as it's my choice, I've chosen one of my favourite psalms. It's a psalm I go back to time and time again. It is the psalm that I have read most frequently, because it speaks so much into my life, into the situation, and I want to share it with you this morning. Is that okay? I'm going to share it with you anyway, but you know, it's so Psalm 90 is where we're going to be looking. Now, the Psalms, as you know, are poetry. They were originally sung, but they were poetry. And when we come to look at a piece of poetry, we need to understand what sort of poetry it is so that we can interpret it correctly. You know, we come to a limerick. There was a young man from Japan who wrote worship songs that never did scan. When asked why this was, he says it's because I try and fit as many words in the last line as I possibly can. So, I mean, that's one sort of poem. And you look at that and think, there is no profound truth in this poem. It's a joke. Other sort of poetry, I don't know if any of you read Shakespearean sonnets. No, me neither. But it's a whole, you know, you come to read one of those and, you don't read it like a limerick. You read it differently. And there are different sorts of psalms. And as we come and read the Psalms, we need to know what sort of psalm it is that we're reading. And this psalm we're looking at today is the most common sort of psalm in the Bible. And it's a psalm of lament. Now, the psalms of lament have three parts to them. And it's important to understand which bit you're in as we work through. So it won't surprise you that the clue is in the name, lament. So the first part of the psalm is a reflection on life. And it's a complaint about life, really. It's a lament about something that is difficult in life. So the first part of the psalm we're going to look at today, it's a bit depressing. It's a lament. Is that all right? Yeah, that's how the psalm goes. And it really speaks into our life and condition. And it sets the context for the third part of the psalm. And the third part of the psalm actually is a request to God. But in a psalm of lament, the most important part, the key part, is the bit that comes between the first part and the third part. And it's the fulcrum on which the psalm turns. And in this psalm, it's verses 11 and 12. And we'll look at that as we go through. Now, as we look at this psalm, as we look at many psalms actually, the way that the psalmist looks at life might seem a bit strange to us. Us people who are educated in the UK, in the West, we have a particular sort of scientific way of looking at life that tends to separate the physical, which people tend to see as the real stuff, from the spiritual, which people tend to see as not quite so real. Now, I know most of you here are Christians, and you're here this morning, you've at least got some sympathy with the Christian faith. So you actually see the spiritual as being pretty important. But the way the psalmist, and in fact the whole of the Bible, sees the physical and the spiritual, and the way that most people in our world see them, is not as two separate things, but actually totally interrelated, totally connected. And that's the view of the psalmist this morning that we're going to be looking at, and that's where we're going. Just to remind you, I have a habit when I'm preaching. I may have other habits as well, but I have a habit when I'm preaching, that I ask questions. Now, I know all preachers ask questions, but most preachers ask questions and then tell you the answer. I'm going to ask you, I think it's two questions today, might be three, might be four, I don't know yet. And you're going to tell me the answer. And I'm going to wander around with this microphone, so that, because this is being recorded today, and if the microphone isn't near you when you're speaking, your voice will not be recorded for posterity. There will be silence on the tape at that point in time. Well, not tape, it's digital these days. Don't use tape anymore. It shows how old I am. So more about how old I am a bit later on. So there we go. So let's begin. Is that okay, me asking questions, by the way?
Yes.
I'm pleased about that. As you know, I'm going to do it anyway. Right, Psalm 90. Let's begin at the beginning, and we're going to go all the way to the end. There are 17 verses in total. Lord, you have been our dwelling place throughout all generations. Before the mountains were born, or you brought forth the whole world from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You turn people back to dust, saying, return to dust, you mortals. God is eternal. Before the world was brought into being, God was. Throughout human history, God has always been there as a shelter, as a dwelling place, as a home for those who recognize him as their Lord. And it speaks today into what for many people in the UK is our rootlessness, our environment of constant change. Having God as home. I was at a conference this week, and one of the speakers was saying that in the last 9 years, they have lived in 8 different cities in the UK. And that sort of movement, it might not be for people in Woodingdean, but that sort of movement about is more and more common in the UK. So people don't have a sense of what is home. Geographical home doesn't exist for many people. A lot of the people that I work with are migrants who've come to the UK. So where is home now? Is it the place that they've left because, for whatever reason, they didn't want to live there anymore? Or is it here? Where is home? So here's my first question. So do I need to turn this on, or does it happen all by itself? It happens all by you. Fantastic. So here's my first question. What does it mean to have God as our dwelling place? When you hear that phrase, God can be our dwelling place, what comes to your mind? God can be our home, our dwelling place. What comes to your mind?
Peace.
I heard a voice over there, but I didn't catch who's... I didn't see the man. You've got to wait till I get to you with the microphone. Ah, nearly there.
A place to turn to.
Security.
Stability.
Security.
And that God is with us always.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? This is good stuff. Are you, I just tried to make my mind whether you were having a scratch or whether you're waving at me.
He dwells within us.
Very good.
We trust in God.
Yeah. Very good. Thank you. I used to, I don't do it anything like as much these days, but I used to travel quite a lot for ministry, for preaching, for teaching. And often I'd be going to a country that I'd never been to before and working with people that I'd never met. Sometimes it was just an email, a conversation setting it up. And so, you know, I'd get off this plane into this usually hot place that where I knew nobody. And one of the things that was an experience for me was that I always knew, partly because this psalm is one of my favourite psalms, or is my favourite psalm, that I was home as I got off that plane. Why was I home? Because God was there already. God was my dwelling place. Even though sometimes I might be standing in the airport for a very long time waiting for someone to turn up and collect me and not terribly sure who it was going to be and all that sort of stuff. But I was okay because actually I'm at home because God's here. God's here. That sense of being, all those things that you've talked about, secure, peace. Now in contrast to God, human beings come from and return to dust. And this is a direct reference to God's judgment of human beings because of sin. Genesis 3 verse 19. And this is part of the judgment of God following the sin of humankind. By the sweat of your brow you will eat your food until you return to the ground. Since from it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you will return. It was never God's intention for human beings to die. This was a result of human sin. And our death is a direct result of God's action. This is a psalm of lament, remember? So it's going to get worse. Verse 4, 1,000 years in your sight are like a day that's just gone by, or like a watch in the night. Yet you sweep people away in the sleep of death. They're like new grass of the morning. So in the morning it springs up new, but by evening it is dry and withered. These are powerful images. Now, we get very excited about New Year, don't we? Well, I don't get so excited these days, but you, in our country, there's huge excitement about New Year. Well, this actually puts celebrating the New Year into context. 1,000 years are in your sight, God, just like a day that's gone by. What we might think to be a big thing is nothing compared to God. This image about the grass, well, at the minute, with the weather we've got, I mean, it's almost like the UK, but actually it's written for a hot country in the Middle East. And every morning the grass is fresh and standing up because of the dew that's fallen during the night. But by the end of the blistering hot day in the sunlight, the grass looks dead. It's lying down. And it looks withered. The following morning, it's all standing up again because the new dew. And this is an image of humanity, of human beings as a whole. As Derek Kidner writes about this passage, ever renewed, but ever fading. Human beings coming and going. And then the psalmist talks about you sweep people away in the sleep of death. Someone who's asleep is not able to respond to what's happening. Years ago, I used to work as a milkman. I forgot what they call them. They stopped calling them milkmen because ladies delivered milk as well. So I think it became milk delivery salesperson or something like that. Looking around here, I think some of you probably can remember the early 1980s. And do you remember those windows that houses used to have where you had slats of glass in a metal frame and you pulled a lever and they opened, and you pushed the lever and they closed. Do you remember that? Don't have them anymore because they're not double glazed, but yeah. So Sunday morning, delivering milk, 5:30 in the morning. We used to start extra early on Sunday, which suited me because it meant I could finish and get to church. But 5:30, and I'm going down, so I'm the only person up, going down the street and coming down a particular road. I noticed as I was coming down that this line of houses, half a dozen or so houses, everyone had the slats. So they had a bay window, and in the middle of the bay window, there was this slatted glass. And I'm looking down the road, and they were all open. And I thought, that's a bit unusual. I don't normally see those. People don't normally leave them open at night. And I got a bit closer, and none of them had any glass in. And the glass was actually on the ground in a neat pile outside the window. You're working what's happened here? Someone has taken the glass out, 6 houses, been inside, burgled, come back out. And the people in the house knew nothing about it. Why? Because they were asleep. And that's the sort of image here that I don't think that the psalmist was thinking about houses in the UK many thousands of years later with windows like that, but it's that being asleep. All human beings are naturally asleep. To quote Kidner again, they are anesthetized to the transitory nature of life. So they just go through life not aware of how short life is. They live as though they're going to live forever. Then suddenly, remember this is a psalm of lament, suddenly they're swept away by death. Just like a tin can, the side of the road, heavy rainstorm, it's just washed away and it's gone. You know, death is nearly always unexpected. I know sometimes there are situations with people, but most of the time, death is unexpected. We had a family event yesterday celebrating my nephew. I've only got one, so my nephew is his 21st birthday yesterday. So we were having a family get together, meals, and just in that conversation there, one of them was talking about one of their close relatives who had just died. No illness apparent beforehand. Obviously there was something wrong with them, but they just died unexpectedly. And so often that's the case. And the psalm reflects that. Feeling a bit despondent? It's about to get worse. Verse 7. We are consumed by your anger. We're terrified by your indignation. You've set our iniquities before you, our secret sins in the light of your presence. All our days pass away under your wrath. We finish our years with a moan. Our days may come to 70 years or 80 if our strength endures. Yet the best of them are but trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass and we fly away. These are somber verses. The context is God's judgment of sin. God brings to light even sins done in dark corners. And it's a stark reminder that the reason we die, in the context of this psalm, 70, 80 years, that life is at times so wearisome, ending in predictable decline, is humankind's sin. I remember when I started ministry in a particular church, one of the ones that I worked in, I visited this lady who lived opposite the church. I'd only been in post for a couple of weeks. I went to see her. It was an easy visit because she was the other side of the road to where the church building was. I went to see her and she said to me, as I was leaving, she said, "Pastor, can I give you some advice?" I said, "Of course you can." She said, "Don't get old." You know, it was not God's intention for life to be like this. But the reality is that periods of life, often towards the end of life, life is wearisome. There is a predictable decline. And behind all of that is God's sin. This is the lament of the psalm. The psalmist looks at life, reflects on his own context, reflects on the context of people around. This is what he sees. And then comes the turn in the psalm, verses 11 and 12. These are the key verses, and this is going to lead into another question. If only we knew the power of your anger. Your wrath is as great as the fear that is your due. Teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. I should mention, by the way, just to encourage you, that this psalm finishes with some amazing good news. But we're not there yet. But it is coming. Most people in life, most people around us, most people you know, most people I know, live for the moment. Either happily or unhappily, they live for the moment. They live for this day. They don't consciously recognize their own mortality. They don't consciously recognize their own sin, and they even more don't realize the connection between the two. Truly wise people, and there are other wise people available, not just those called wise. Truly wise people realize how short their lives are. Truly wise people recognize that God judges sin. Truly wise people live their lives appropriately. Recognizing God's wrath. Teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. So here's my second question. I think I'm probably only going to do two questions today. So here's my second question. What do you think it means, or what does it mean for you? You can choose which question to answer. To number your days. What do you think that phrase means? What does it mean for you? What might it mean for others to number your days, that we may have a heart of wisdom? What do you think?
I would say it's talking about our own mortality, that we don't know when we're going to die. We've got an unknown amount of days ahead of us, to live those days in a way that pleases God, and that's kind of using my wisdom, is to listen to the word of God and act on that.
Great, thank you.
To live according to God's will during the time frame that He's given us.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
As it says, we've only got a short time, 70 years. So really, it's virtually saying to us, yes, our days are numbered and they are short. So we need to return to the Lord and do as the Bible says.
Mm-hmm. I saw someone's hand over here, but I'd forgotten who it was. So.
Reflecting on the word, that is probably the way we should be numbering our days, learning from it, receiving the teaching, and working with it.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Fairly similar to Rose, I think. Learning from the past, the days of the past, and in the light of the unknown future, preparing moment by moment with our focus on God.
Thank you.
Being ready to be called home at any moment.
I used to, some of the sermons I've preached over the years in evangelistic context, I'd ask the question, if you knew that Jesus was coming back at 2 o'clock on Tuesday afternoon, how would it change how you live between now and then? Get some answers. And I'd say, if you follow what the Bible teaches, it shouldn't make any difference. I've been at a conference early this week, a theology conference, and a practical theology conference to be precise, and it was reflecting on the process of the way our spirituality changes from childhood through to the third age, so that's 60 to 80 years old, and different people doing academic research into those things. I'm not going to unpack all of that, but what was relevant to this was the section that was particularly reflecting on the 60 to 80 year old. Like looking around, I think some of you are perhaps in that category, you know. I am for certain. And people were talking about, just about for them, what they discovered in their research, but also that whole thing about recognizing that one of the key things is that people who are thinking about these things, they don't know how long they've got left. A couple of the speakers were saying they already are at the age that their parents were when their parents died, or they're older. I've been a Christian now for over 55 years. And I have, like all of us actually, I have no idea how much time I have left on this planet. I don't know. I think I'm fit and healthy. But also, people who were my friends, who were the same age as me, now have died. And some dramatically and unexpectedly. One of my ministerial colleagues, just a couple of months ago, walking along the beach, not far along the coast from where we are, where I live, and he just fell to the ground dead. Heart attack. No previous warning whatsoever. We just don't know. And so because of that, for me, I want every day to count. I want every day to count.
70 is the lifespan, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. If anything living over that time, you
think of that. Yeah? Yes. So just wanting every day to count for God. So with that, there is some good news. Would you like some good news to finish with?
Yes.
Oh, there's some fantastic, it's one of the reasons my favourite song. There is some fantastic news coming, particularly in the last couple of verses, but we'll work towards that. Verse 13 to 15. Relent, O Lord. So now we're in the request to God, because we've had the lament, we've had the turning point, and now we're moving into positive territory. Relent, O Lord. How long will it be? Have compassion on your servants. Satisfy us in the morning with your unfailing love, that we may sing for joy and be glad all our days. Make us glad for as many days as you have afflicted us, for as many years as we have seen trouble. In the Old Testament, mourning was considered, it was the conventional time for the answer of prayer. And the reason for that, you know, going back in those days, you didn't have street lights and electricity and all of that. And at night, it was seriously dark. And in the Middle East, in Israel-Palestine area, when the sun comes up, I mean, in the UK often, for much of the year, when the sun comes up, you hardly notice it. You know what I mean? I had a colleague studying with me some years ago, and he'd never been outside of Ethiopia before, and he'd come to the UK to study, and we met at, on the course together. And after a week, he said to me, he said, David, he says, doesn't it ever get light here? So it is, you know, in the Middle Eastern context and much of the world, you move from darkness to bright light very quickly. Whereas here, not so much. A bit different this time of year, but for most of the year, it's not like that. So it was the time for answer prayer, the coming of dawn. It brought people from the darkness of night into the light of a new day. And the prayer here is for the reversal of judgment. And this prayer, or a version of this, tips up in the New Testament as well. In fact, in 2 Corinthians 4, verses 16 to 18. Therefore, do not lose heart. Though outwardly we're wasting away, some perhaps can identify with that, outwardly we're wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, the physical, but on what is unseen. Since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. And this is to be our experience as people walking with God. Even as we get older and perhaps a bit more frail, we are being renewed inwardly by God. And we have hope. So many people in life don't have hope. We have hope. Because of our faith in God, our trust in God. And then we come to the last two verses. Prepare yourself for some really good news. Are you ready? Yes. Prepare yourself for some really good news. Are you ready?
Yes.
May your deeds be shown to your servants, your splendor to their children. May the favor of the Lord our God rest on us. Establish the work of our hands for us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. Now, this is an amazing prayer. It's a prayer that we, God's people, are not simply going to be spectators of what's happening in life. One of my favorite writers, he wrote on this psalm in the 1890s, guy called McLaren. So the language is a little bit old style, but I like this. Our fleeting days are ennobled by our being permitted to be God's tools. I'll unpack that in a moment. One other quote, Charles Haddon Spurgeon, a bit more recent. Since it's far more his work than ours, he will secure it immortality. So here's the amazing thing. You see, what God does lasts how long? For eternity. So if our hands are doing God's work, how long does it make a difference for? Eternity. So here's the promise here. As we become tools in God's hands, as McLaren talks about it, the work that we do makes a difference for eternity. It counts for eternity. Isn't that amazing? You and I, we can make a difference for eternity in our world and in people's lives in our world. That's the promise here. In the context of all of the lament that we've looked at, of what God, of what life can be like, and of God's activity, God's judgment, since our work is more his work than ours, says Spurgeon, God will secure it immortality. Our labour, your labour, my labour, is not in vain, because it's God's stuff. Now, some of us, I'm coming into land now, I've finished, in case you think you're never going to get home. Some of us can really identify with the second half of verse 10. You know, our days are but trouble and sorrow, they quickly pass, we fly away. For some of you, I suspect your days at the moment may be troubled. There may be sorrow in your life. What this psalm is about is, to quote someone else, Weiser, as he wrote on this, is that we can experience the eternity of God in the midst of our passing life, whatever's going on, whatever situation we are in. But for this to be our reality, we need to number our days. So to sum up, four things from this morning that we've looked at. God can be our dwelling place. Mortality was not God's intention for us. We should live our short lives centered on God. And our lives can make a difference for eternity. God bless you.